Okay, the parasha, we're going to do something, a little bit about the Haggadah of Pesach, and we'll connect it to the parasha. The first thing on the sheet, firstly, is this odd thing that we have in the beginning of the Haggadah, you may have noticed, which is sort of like a table of contents for the Haggadah. And this table of contents, scholars attributed to Rav Shmuel Mipalaizer. Now, Rav Shmuel Mipalaizer was he was one of the Balei HaTosafot who lived in the 13th century. Like, you have to just understand, Balei HaTosafot are the children and grandchildren of Rashi. Right? Rashi was in the 11th century, this is the 13th century. So the children and the children of the children and the intermarried children, the ones that are not directly from Rashi's family, they're all Baalei Tosafot. And he wrote this introduction. We don't know why he wrote the introduction, but it's something to think about. Now, most people, most Eidot even, I think, as far as I was able to look into it, sing this. There's a melody that everybody has. Everybody has a melody. They're not always the same, but they sing, you know, the way I learned in my father's house, so there's a little bit different versions of the same thing, but it's like you start off the Seder with a bang, you know, like there's something happening. But the question, of course, is why is this the case? I mean, why? So you could say, look, the 13th century was before printing. Right before Gutenberg or before China, but we usually go by Gutenberg. Gutenberg changed everything, like the world changed, because everybody could get a book. But before Gutenberg, before the 15th century, this is the 13th century, the 15th century, that they call that, I think printed in the 15th century is called the Cunabula.
From 1385.
Who? Gutenberg?
1385
was Gutenberg, yeah. But the century...
Yeah, the rest of that century.
Yeah. No, the whole next century was in Kunabu. So once you had printing, everybody could get a Haggadah. I mean, it's true, they didn't have the Manischewitz Haggadah, but they had a Haggadah, right? They had a Haggadah, and they didn't need the introduction. But maybe before printing, they needed a way to remember what it was that they were supposed to do. You know, what they were supposed to do when they did the Seder. So along came Rav Shmuel, and he invented this table of contents. The table of contents which tell us what we're supposed to do. So you see, Kadesh, that's the first thing we do is we make Kiddush. Right? We make Kiddush. When is the Seder this year? It's on Friday night?
Yes.
Oh, good. So Friday night, there's a mitzvah d'oraita to say Kiddush. And then there's a mitzvah d'rabbanan to say Kiddush on Yontif, right? The Kiddush on Shabbos is d'oraita because it says Zachor Yom Shabbat L'Kadsho. You have to remember Shabbat. And the way we do that is by saying Kiddush. On Yontif, there's sort of like an extension. We say, okay, we'll also do it on Yontif. But if it was not Shabbat, it would be a mitzvah d'rabbanan to say Kiddush. The main thing is the difference, of course, in the Kiddush on Seder night and the Kiddush on Shabbos or Shabbos night is that on Friday night, you don't really have to drink from the wine, even though people do it.
Why not?
Right? What? Why not? Why not? Yeah. Or like, what would I do with all those little cups that I have? I mean, well, I didn't give out the wine for Kiddush. So you don't have to drink the wine. But usually the halacha is that the wine, the rov kos of the wine, whoever made Kiddush, has to be drunk. So if the person who made Kiddush doesn't want to drink all that wine, he can rely on others to help him. You know, give out a little of the wine to everybody. So everybody drinks a little wine, and the rov kos of the Kiddush wine is thereby drunk. But on Pesach, there's a difference. Because on Pesach, there's a halacha of arba kosot. arbakos, so four cups of wine, have to be drunk by everybody who's telling the story. And everybody who's telling the story is everybody. It was the obligation to tell the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim devolves equally upon everybody who's sitting at the Seder. There's no difference between men and women, adults and older adults and younger adults. There's no difference. Everybody who's chayav in a mitzvah, everybody who has to do the mitzvah, has to drink four cups of wine. And the first cup of wine that you drink is the cup of Kiddush. And so even though on a yontif, on a regular yontif, it's not Shabbat, you don't have an obligation to say Kiddush, but you do have an obligation to drink the wine. It was, you can't ask the person sitting next to you to help you drink the wine. You have to drink a cup. Each one has to drink a cup of wine. Or today people use grape juice because it doesn't affect your soul quite as devastatingly. So you can use grape juice. I guess I don't do that. I always drink wine. But it seems to me that wine was the idea of making the meal of great importance. It's part of the Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim. Part of the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim is that I feel like an important person. I feel that there are different things that I lean when I eat and I drink the wine. And that's the things that rich people do. Like, you know, I mean, a cup of wine costs a lot more than a cup of Pepsi Max. So you feel good about drinking the wine. But every person has to feel that way because it's part of the story. Part of the story, like I was enslaved in Mitzrayim, and now I'm free. And I want to feel free. I want to feel. Interestingly, the first Mishnah in the 10th Perek of Pesachim says that even poor people, people who are the dole, you know, who receive support, the Mishnah it's called Minatamchui, right? The people who are supported by the community, even they should feel this way, because they, after all, are telling the story. And as you see, if you look at again, if you think about what happened last year, but the story of Pesach is told by speech and by action. Right? You do something. You do something when you tell the story, and the part of the action is pointing at things. For example, when you mention matzah, you point at the matzah. So people realize when you point at something, usually it's important. You're pointing at something because it's important, but it's part of the way you tell the story. Right? You know, with little kids, they go to school and they show and tell. Show and tell is helpful. It's helpful to understand. So when you say, and they didn't have time to bake bread, they could only bake matzah, you point to the matzah, you say, yeah, I haven't eaten that since Yitziat Mitzrayim, you know, like bread is a lot better. But you tell the story, that way. So that's Kadesh Urchatz, Karpas Yachatz. So it may be that the reason that Rav Shmuel invented this list of things was practical. In other words, not everybody had a Haggadah, and maybe they would forget it. So if they could teach a jingle, I don't know if he was into that kind of education, but if I could teach the Jewish people a jingle which will tell them how to do the Seder, maybe that would be helpful. Maybe that would be helpful, especially since not everything in this list is necessarily about Yitziat Mitzrayim. But for example, Karpas is something we do. There were things that are done so to encourage people to wonder about what's going on, right? To encourage children to ask, to encourage people to ask each other, why are we doing this and why are we acting this way? And that seemed to be the way that the Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim was encouraged. So it could be that Shmuel made up this list, this outline, in order to make it easier for people to remember what they had to do. Because there are mitzvot d'oraita, mitzvot d'rabbanan that we do, especially the Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim is equally obligatory on men and women, and so it's important. It's important that everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing. I mean, today it's a lot easier because everybody has a Haggadah. I mean, the Haggadah could be colored Haggadah, all kinds of different ways of getting out the material. But that's the first thing. But I wanted to know if maybe we could look at it a little more carefully, this idea that there's a table of contents, and see if we can get a different interpretation. I mean, in any event, this list of things that Rav Shmuel wrote down made it into every single printed Haggadah in the world. I have not seen every single printed Haggadah in the world, but I've seen a lot of them. And they all contain. They all contain Kadesh, Shurchat, Kadesh, Yachat. I mean, somehow the Jewish people saw this as being important. It's important. And as we said at the beginning, they even sing it together. So now we're not going to forget the fact that the Parashat HaShavua is Tazria. Parashat HaShavua this week is Tazria. You know that Tazria, I mean, I'm leaving the list and going to the Parsha. The Parsha is Tazria. The end of the Parsha of Shmini, last week's Parsha, is about animals that are designated as being either Tamei or Tahor, and they're even listed. Many of these animals, birds, pheasants, etc., are listed as Tamei and Tahor. Tahor means edible, and Tamei means don't eat them. The Torah doesn't tell us why we shouldn't eat them, or it doesn't tell us whether we have an obligation to eat animals or not, you know, whether being a vegetarian is a good idea or bad. The Torah doesn't relate to that. But the Torah does say that there are animals that are edible, Torah edible, and there are animals that are not edible at all. At the end of the parasha, the idea of that I've mentioned this, I may have even mentioned it recently, the end of the parasha, there are two psukim of great significance. The first pasuk is on the sheet. Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem v'kadishtem v'yitem kedoshim. V'kadishtem, I want to offer a interpretation of the word v'kadishtem. Right? Obviously the root of the word is kadosh. And kadosh is usually translated as sacred, sanctity, of that kind. But what I think that the word means is distinguish. It was v'kadishtem, v'yitem kedoshim means distinguish as the Torah has taught you, and you will be in that category. So that means that v'kadishtem in this case means some animals are edible and some animals are not edible. That's v'kadishtem. Ki kadosh ani. That somehow this relates us to God. Right? We have to distinguish. God is the ultimate distinguisher. And therefore, if we do it, the Torah tells us to do, that puts us on a path that directs us to God. Velo titamu et nafshotechem, and you will not tamei. Tamei is a word that describes, well, in English you might say unclean, but that wouldn't give you the force of it. Tamei is something that's not good for you, not good to be with, not good to undertake. All of that is called tamei. But lo titamu et nafshotechem. Now the word nafshotechem is again a difficult word, even though we all know what it means, right? A person, if I take that view that there's a physical person and that there's a more spiritual person. So the word nafshotechem applies to the latter and not to the former. Now how exactly to describe that further, I demur. Lo titamu et nafshotechem, b'kol ha-sheretz ha-rometz ala ha-aretz. Sheretz is a creepy, crawly thing that runs around on the ground, right? Even though some creepy, crawly things are kosher, but many of them are not. Right? I think grasshoppers are kosher. It doesn't, I mean, it doesn't have that much appeal, but I think, you know, the Yemenites used to eat grasshopper, they used to fry them, you know, and make it into a kugel, a grasshopper kugel. But I think eventually they stopped making that noise. Okay, so that's what it says. So this is pretty serious. This comes at the end of the parasha, this psukim at the end of the parasha of Shmini, and sort of summarize the idea that there are kosher animals and non-kosher animals. It summarizes that idea, right? And then it says, Pasuk Mem Hei, Ki. Right? The Pasuk Mem Dalet also says Ki. Right? Meaning, this is the reason. If you follow my directive, you end up kadosh. You end up tahor. You avoid being tamei. Right? You're just like God in some way, which is why I wanted to translate, is to distinguish. Pasuk Mem Hei Ki. Ki, again, Ani Hashem. Who brought you up? Ma'ale is the word to bring up. Right? Ma'ale etchem me'eretz Mitzrayim. Liot lachem le'lokim. In order that I will be you, a God for you. V'yitem kidoshim nochamu. And you will be, whatever the word kidoshim means. Again, I think it means to distinguish. You will be a distinguisher. V'yitem kidoshim. Ki kadosh ani. Ki kadosh ani. If you look at the Rashi, Rashi doesn't help us much, but he gives us, he highlights the problem. Pasuk Mem Dalet, it says, Ki ani Hashem Elokechem. That's how it starts. Kishem shani kadosh, shani Hashem Elokechem. Kach vid kadishtem. Just like I, God, am kadosh, whatever that means. But we know that in the creation of the world, that God did certain acts of distinguishing, lahavdil, right, between the dry land and the land, between Gan Eden and the rest of the world. There were certain elements of distinction or distinguishing that were part of the creation itself. Even though the word lahavdil was not considered by the Baalei Kabbalah as one of the verbs of creation, right? Creation, Aleph, Bet, Yud, Ayin, Amira, Berea, Yitzira, and Asiya. Those are the verbs that the Baalei Kabbalah understood as being verbs of creation. But the word lahavdil also appears, and it's a sort of a kind of creation, maybe a lower level of creation, distinguishing between two things that are there, right? The dry land is actually there under the water. It's just that you have to move the water away. It's not a new creation, but it's a reorientation. It's a reorientation of sorts. Again, V'yitem kidoshim, Rashi, L'fi sh'anei ekdash etchem le'mala u'balam haba. So Rashi has difficulty. Like, he looks around wherever he was and he sees the people and they're all eating kosher food, but he doesn't see the kedusha. He doesn't see it. It's like, you know, Rashi probably had the same problem we have. Like, we know who the rabbis are, but we don't always see them as being special, unfortunately. So Rashi says, the fish are naked, that should come limala ubalomaba. This is going to happen in heaven and in the next world. It's sort of like, you can't judge the Torah promise by what you see, because the Torah promise might be about the next world, the world that is coming. So now, Rashi says, Lo titamu, you should not be unclean, you should not be tamei, lavor alem belavin habetu, you should not deny God's prohibitions, lavin harbe, the negative commandments. They call lav malkot. Every lav creates an obligation of malkot. B'zeu shabru b'talmud, and that's what the Gemara says, that if you do an avera, you get malkot. You get malkot. Quotes the Gemara. Let's go on. Ki ani Hashem amala etchem. This is really the crucial issue. Amala etchem. Al menat shetegablu b'tzvotai ha'leiti etchem. So Rashi says the simple pshat. I brought you up out of Mitzrayim. Amala etchem. I brought you up out of Mitzrayim in order that you get the mitzvot. I mean, the whole point is Har Sinai, Kabbalat Torah, Kiyum HaMitzvot. That's what we do. That's what we do. Al menat shetekablu mitzvotai haleiti etchem. Davar acher, ki ani Hashem amala etchem. I have another point. Davar acher doesn't mean an alternate, a different explanation. It means a further explanation. He says that I have to point this out to you. He says the pasuk says ki ani Hashem amala etchem. Bikulam k'ti v'otzeiti. Every place else in the Torah, it says v'otzeiti horizontal. You go from Mitzrayim to Har Sinai. That's horizontal. So the word that should be used, the verb that should be used, is yitziyah. I brought you out of Mitzrayim, not I brought you up from Mitzrayim. That's wrong, according to Rashi. He said, "Bekulam k'tiv hotzeiti, v'kan k'tiv hama'ale." So that's the question. Why does the Torah say hama'ale etchem me'eretz Mitzrayim here in this pasuk? Tana d'vei Rabbi Yishmael. Tana d'vei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael was a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva, right? Two Tanaim who were forging the ideas of Jews, at least the ideas we have. We don't have anything, we don't have much from the period of David HaMelech until the Tanaim. But the Tanaim, we have a lot. And Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael said, Il Malay, Lo Eleiti et Yisrael bi Mitzrayim ela bishvil she'em mitamim bishratzim kishar umot. If I had only brought them out of Mitzrayim in order that they should accept the prohibition against eating shratzim again, creepy, crawly little things in the ground, if they had only accepted that, dayam. What does dayam mean? That would be enough. What do you need the Torah for? It's enough not to eat grasshoppers, or to eat grasshoppers, but not to eat other things, locusts.
Sufficient.
Uma'aliyuta higabayu. And this gives them a ma'ala, an advantage. It raises them up. It raises them up. Mizeu l'shon ma'ala. That's why the pasuk says, I brought them up from Israel. I brought them up from Mitzrayim. So this, of course, is reminiscent. This, of course, is reminiscent of a very important part of the Haggadah. Dayenu. Right? That's like the most important thing that there is. Everybody sleeps for the rest of it. But Dayenu is a showstopper. Everybody sings Dayenu. Thankfully, nobody knows exactly what they're singing and whether or not they should be happy about it. But for example, Dayenu is the poem that says, if I had only received X, that would have been enough for me. And in fact, X is a lot less than the Torah. And in fact, there's a line in Dayenu which says, Ilu kervanu lifnei har Sinai. Velo natan lanu et haTorah, dayenu. Absolutely impossible. How could anybody say anything like that? How could anybody say anything like Ilu kervanu lifnei har Sinai? If God would have brought us to Mount Sinai, velo natan lanu et haTorah, dayenu. But I argued once, and I will argue against, that this is the most important line in the story of Yitziyat Mitzrayim. Before we get to that, let's learn another pasuk.
Which is the
Dayenu. All this is the same. It's the same. This line in Rashi and that line in Dayenu, which we don't say the line in Rashi on the night of the Seder, But it's the same idea, and it's probably the most important line in the Haggadah. Now, the beginning of the parasha of Tazria, that's this week's parasha, right? Tazria. Tazria is about Tuma v'tahara. It starts off with Tum'at Yoledet, a birthing woman, a woman who gives birth, is Tameh. This for some period of time, and then she goes to the mikveh, and she's not Tameh anymore. That's why that's the beginning of the parsha of Tazria. So the pasuk says, "Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor, see, daber b'nei Yisrael le'mor, isha ki Tazria v'yalda zachar ki Tazria." It's hard. Usually, the zera seed is associated with the man, but so I guess it could be a woman who is seeded somehow v'yalda zachar. And then she becomes Tameh. She becomes Tameh. So that's what the Pasuk says, and it goes on to the various halachot that are connected to childbirth, the birth of a male, the birth of a female, etc. Now Rashi quotes a medrash. Rashi quotes a medrash on this Pasuk. And the medrash says, Omar Rabbi Simlai. That's how we say it, Simlai. I don't know if it's right, but we say it that way. Kishem sheyitzirato shel adam achar kol behema chaya v'of ma'aseh bereshit. Just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to create man, according to the story in the first chapter of Bereshit, right? First chapter of Bereshit? Simchat Torah? First chapter of Bereshit. That the creation of man, woman, was on the sixth day of creation. Whereas the behema, chaya, va'of, the big animals, the little animals, the wild animals, the birds, were all created on the fifth day. So that Rav Simlai says, look here, kishem sheyitzirato shel adam achar kol behema chaya va'of. It's just like man was created after behema chaya va'of ba'aseh bereshit, kach tarato nitparsha achar torat behema chaya va'of. Similarly, in the parasha of Shmini, what do you have in the parasha of Shmini? Behema chaya va'of tuma v'tahara. Which animals you can eat and which animals you can't eat. And then along comes Tazria. Tazria talks about tuma v'tahara of this woman who's giving birth. So Rabbi Simlai is sitting in the yeshiva, and somebody asked him a question: how come wouldn't you say that man / woman are more important than behema chaya va'of? Shouldn't the Torah have taught us this material in the opposite way? First teach us about isha ki tazria, then teach us about behema chaya va'of. So what did Rabbi Simlai say? What did Rabbi Simlai say? He said, b'nei breshit. The way God created the world is a model of order. Order. It was like God could have created the world in a heartbeat. Poof! Here's the world. Didn't have to be done. It didn't have to be done in an order. But it was done in an order, and that means that the order is of great importance. It's of such great importance, and when the Torah presents us the topic, the big topic of Tuma V'Tahara, it starts off with Behema Chaya V'Of, and then only goes to Adam and a man and a woman, because that's the way the order in Bereshit was. And the order in Bereshit is critical, crucial, important. It must be that way. That's what Rabbi Simlai said, but we don't know. We understand what Rabbi Simlai said. Rabbi Simlai, you know, like he had this nudniki student who annoyed him, and he took care of it. He said, look, you know, this is the point of comparison, but we don't understand what the importance of it is. So, you know, there's a halacha that's quoted originally in the Gemara. It's not on the sheet. Maybe I'll get to the sheet. These are the Mishnayot. Okay, let's learn a Mishnah. One Mishnah, Dalet. You see Mishnah Dalet? We already took Mishnah Bet, said Mazgulo Kos Rishon. I told you the Kos Rishon is the Kos of Kiddush. But the Kos has to be drunk. Everybody has to drink a Kos of wine. Dalet Mazgulo Kos Sheini. You see that? So now a second Kos. Vekan haben shoel aviv, v'imein dat baben aviv melamdo. Here the child, there's this kind of, the whole world turns into a big cheder. And everybody is teaching everybody else. It's not like we do it, where everybody says, no, I want to say something, let me say something. You know, not like that. That the point here is to teach. V'aben shoel aviv, and if the son is not capable of asking a question, it was the Gemara, and we know it turns into Chacham and Rasha and Tam. It was the Haggadah recognizes the fact that we don't live in a perfect world. That, you know, children are not all the same. Some of them are more likely to get involved, and some are less likely to get involved. And it's the obligation of whoever is teaching the Seder, which is what it is. It's not just repeating the words of the Haggadah, but it's somehow there's a teaching aspect to it. He's got to find the words, the language, the way of approaching the Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim to all the different kinds of children that he might have, or might be in the Seder, might be in the Cheder. So he says, Manishta, the father says, Manishtana alayla azeh, if the son can't say it, mikol halelot, shevichol halelot. I mean, today, of course, everything is went kakai. Today, every child who can barely speak can say the Manishtana, and we insist that that's the child who should say it. And that anybody who might understand the words of the question is exempt. I mean, that's, you know, but I don't think that's the idea. I think the idea is clarification. There's a, like, what's the question? The question is, if I wanted to remember that the Jews leaving Mitzrayim ate matzah, why do I have to get rid of the chametz? It's true that they didn't eat chametz by accident. But why can't I commemorate that without getting rid of all the chametz in sight? That's an interesting question, and that's a question that we might ask. It says, then he goes on with the other questions. Ulefi, the end of this halakha, the end of halakha dalet, lefi dato shel ben aviv belamdo matchil begenut v'sayim b'shvach, and so they tell you how you should do it. You should start off saying gnut about somebody. In other words, say something unpleasant, right? Lashon hara. You know, say something that is not usually acceptable. B'sayim b'shvach, and then at the end you talk about God and Am Yisrael and how great it all turned out. You have to basically be optimistic. So, we'll get back to Dayenu, Amale Etchem Eretz Mitzrayim, Rab Simlai, and the teaching of the Haggadah to the children, you know, who should be taught. The Gemara says, Kol Hamar Beh, Areze Meshubach. That's what the Gemara says. The more you talk, and then it brings a story about the Tanaim and Bnei Brak, that we're talking about Yitziat Mitzrayim all night long, and then the Talmidim came and said to them, listen, you know, you have a few other mitzvahs that you have to do. You have to say Kriyat Shema, you have to daven. Says, what's this sitting around and talking? Okay, we don't have the response that the Tanaim might have given to the Talmidim, who came and said, look, you're doing the wrong thing by staying up all night. We don't have their response. But it's not hard to imagine that Rabbi Akiva would have a response. I mean, he was pretty good at these kind of things. So again, it says, "Kol ha'marbe l'saper b'yitziyat b'shrayim." The Rambam quotes the halacha, "Hareza mishubach." It's a good thing. Good thing. Talk and talk and talk. They said, "Well, what is it exactly that we're supposed to talk about?" And we weren't there. We don't know any more than the Torah tells us. And if we add to that whatever Chazal told us, well, that's all we know. There's no marbe. There's no marbe l'saper b'yitziyat Mitzrayim, is there? I mean, where's the marbe going to come from? What kind of information do I have? So, you know, in modern times, people say, well, you know, you could talk about any tragedy that exists in the world. You know, could talk about Biafra, or you could talk about Pakistan. But that's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam says you have to talk about Yitziyat Mitzrayim. So if I have to talk about Yitziyat Mitzrayim, what exactly am I going to talk about? What is it that I'm going to say that is marbed, that is more than I said last year, that is more than I said to the children who were in my Seder a year before? What am I going to say? So you know that there's a machloket tanaim about how many miracles there were. But how many miracles there were in Yitziyat Mitzrayim? Now that's a very interesting machloket, because the Torah tells us exactly how many miracles there were. The Torah says, without any kind of embarrassment, that there were 10. There were 10 miracles, 10 plagues. 10 plagues plagued it. So we have a Tana, Rav Gamliel, comes along and says, no, it wasn't 10. I can show you there was 250. 250? 250. I say, how do you get 250 from 10? I'm not talking about the drasha. I'm not talking about the drasha, but how does it work? So it all goes back to Dayenu. It all goes back to Dayenu. What did Dayenu say? Dayenu says, you can tell a story. You can tell a story in different ways. You can tell a story, there's a beginning to it, and there's an end to it. So what's the story of Yitziyat Mitzrayim? Well, we were slaves, living miserable lives, having difficult times. And then we were free, and we get to Har Sinai and receive the Torah. That's a story. That's a true story. There's nothing untrue about that story. But like every story, where, you know, which has been written and rewritten by novelists and poets, and you know, over the years, you know, the thousands of years of storytelling, the same story, exactly the same story, but in one way, in another way, right? Stories compared to something that Shakespeare wrote. The stories compared to something that were like Paradise Lost, which is a way of telling a story that was told before. Or like Rembrandt painting a story of a biblical scene, which was done before. What is it that happens when the story is being retold? Suddenly, details come to life that you hadn't thought about. That's what makes the story. It's not exactly the same. It's the details. It's the details that make the story. It's the details. It's like what the Gemara is telling you to do is look very carefully at the kind of given story, the outline, and see if you could find a way of expanding it, of talking about Moshe Rabbeinu's feeling when the people, when he messed up Yitziyat Mitzrayim, at least the people accused him of messing up. It didn't go so well in the beginning. Or if you want to talk about why Paro was so strong in his opposition, where did he get that inner strength from? So you could talk about that. If you wanted to talk about Aaron HaKohen, his leadership role, his, what's the difference between speech and the lack of speech, the lack of the ability that Moshe Rabbeinu supposedly had to express himself in a way that would be convincing to all of Bnei Yisrael. So that in the story, this is like the Gemara, like the Rashi says at the beginning of Vayikra. Remember Vayikra? Vayikra, the first pasuk in Vayikra. So Rashi says, you know, there are spaces in the Torah. There are spaces, there are blank spaces, like paragraph dividers. A paragraph divider is a blank. It's like the two kinds of paragraph dividers in the Torah, right? One is called pei. That's called
Sava.
Ptucha and Stuma. Right? There are two kinds of paragraph dividers. One is that you finish writing a line, half a line, and you start on the next line. And the other paragraph divider is you finish whatever you're saying, and then you skip the space of 10 letters, and then you start writing again. So the first one, we start on the next line, is a stronger divider. So the Rashi says, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I want to give you time to think about what you are saying and teaching. You need those spaces. You need those spaces. That's what Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim is about. So Kol HaMarba L'Saper B'Yitziat Mitzrayim, Areza B'Shubach, you're telling a better story. It's not just that you're talking, not just that you're saying things, but you're telling a story, and you can, of course, say that that's what Rav Shmuel was reminding us about when he wrote Kadesh Urchatz Karpas Yachatz. He said, every one of these stations of the Seder is something you could expand upon. You have to remember it in terms of itself. Each thing, it just doesn't flow one into the other. You could, you know, do a Seder in a very short period of time, if you know, you can. It's not really that much. It's not really that oppressive if you're willing to sit and do it quickly. But if you're willing to think about each of the stages of the Seder, and you're willing to say that there is an order, that there is an order to things, and that the order is itself significant, but you don't see the order without Rav Shmuel's list. Then you see an order. You say, oh, I know why we start from Kadesh, and I know why there's Hallel when the Hallel comes. I mean, I know it makes sense to me. It's not any longer a kind of mystery that I can only deal with with difficulty. And so we come to Rav Simlai. Rav Simlai said, you have to look at the creation of the world. And in the creation of the world, God took the trouble to teach us that there's an order to things, and that order is discoverable in the world in which we live. And so the Torah said, first, Behema Chayava Of. You have to understand, the person is to be able to observe the reality. And even though, and so from the idea of Seder, I think that's where science comes from. Science is entirely dependent on the ordering of things, being able to classify them, to de-jungle the whole world that we see in front of us and put it into either formulas or sections some way. Like if you look at the list of chemical elements, don't have to look at it. But if you remember it, you probably learned about it once at some point in school. There are 118, I think. I looked it up. There are 118 elements today. They're not all natural. Some of them are synthetic, but that's how many there are. And so what does that mean? It means that when I look at the world, I see a wall, I see a painting, I see a table, but I can't get into it. The chemistry is what, or the chemical elements, what helps me get into a world that's beyond the world that I see. The world of atoms. Atoms and different atoms, you put different atoms together, it's remarkable. They make different things. Like some atoms you put together make hydrogen, and some atoms you put together to make helium, and some atoms make plastic. I mean, it's all a question of being able to see into the ordering of things. That's what science is based on. Any kind of observation is based on that. So Rav Simlai said, you know, when you try to think about things, you have to have an order in your mind. So the order for Tumah v'Tahara, according to Rav Simlai, comes from the creation of the world. And that God created the world and told us about the fifth day, the sixth day, the seventh day, in order to give us a key to understanding the world that we live in. And that's what we do. And so Rav Shmuel Bipolaiza, when he wrote the order of the Haggadah, he wrote it for our benefit. He knew that if we had the order, we would see it more clearly. We would understand it better. Because we would be able to put together all the things we do in the Haggadah into one kind of a theory of talking, of speech making, of telling a story. And so I think all these things are connected. Kaddish Urchatz, Hamala Etchem Eretz Mitzrayim. Oh, we didn't explain that. Hamala Etchem Eretz Mitzrayim. That's the third thing. That once you understand that being able to distinguish the Tumah v'Tahara of the animals or the Tumah v'Tahara of people, once I'm able to distinguish that, then I understand that that this itself changes our status in the world. We're different people. We're the people who have like this little advantage from God about how to see things, how to see the world. And that's why the Pasuk says, Hamala etchem me'eretz Mitzrayim. And that's why Dayenu says, Ilu kerabanu l'vdei Sinai, v'lo natan lanu et haTorah, Dayenu. Okay, have a good Shabbos. We could have a shiur next week. Next week. Okay. What?
Sure.
Okay, next week there's a shiur. On the Haggadah, again on the Haggadah.